I'm Derek Russell.
And I'm Brad Locke, and this is The Memo.
A gathering of all things Northeast Mississippi, brought to you by The Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Welcome back to another episode of The Memo. It's Thursday, October 29th, and I'm Derek Russell back with you again. Our producer, Chris Kiefer, sitting in the hosting chair. Seems like every other episode, it's a cavalcade of...
It's been a lot.
I was going to say whodunit, but I hope nobody's getting murdered here.
The lights are flickering.
It is Halloween.
It is Halloween.
And our last episode before Halloween, what are the boys dressing up as? Yeah.
Daniel is either going to be Batman or Harry Potter. I think Batman. Mm-hmm. He kept going back and forth, and the costumes were on sale, so we just got both. Because I think he's kind of at the age or at the size where they can fit him next year, too, and... He likes costumes, so he had them on all day yesterday.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was leery at first about buying a Halloween costume from so young, particularly last year, and he's going to wear it one day and spend all that money. And then I saw his Spider-Man costume he wore all the time, so I kind of felt better that he'll wear them.
Yeah, they'll get the
and Jonathan will be Superman.
Very so, nice.
Yeah, how about Wesley?
She is a character from the new Star Wars movie that she's very obsessed with the fact that a female lead is the main character in the new film. So she's happy to
that's her character.
Portray her. Yeah. So she's excited about that. Maybe the rain will hold off over the weekend so people can enjoy trick-or-treating. It was a nice surprise to walk out after being inside most of the day yesterday to see the sun had come out and
forgot what it looked like.
It sounded like Itsy Bitsy Spider, but dried up all the rain a little bit.
I was thinking more of I saw the sun.
Yeah, that too.
It opened up my eyes.
it was good.
Well, here comes the sun.
Warm. Do the Beatles reference, that's probably the best. That was a good thing, but it doesn't sound like it's going to last from what William was telling us yesterday and just looking at the weather forecast. I think come Friday night, we're in for 90% chance. Friday night, Saturday morning.
That's what I'm hearing. My mom actually mentioned me in the New Orleans area. A lot of the parishes down there have moved their trick-or-treating from Saturday to Friday to try to beat the weather.
Try to beat it. I imagine that's what a lot of people will do tomorrow night.
Yeah.
There's not really a citywide mandate. It's just
the problem is you got everybody on the same page.
I haven't bought candy.
There'll be no candy.
Yeah, I haven't bought candy either way. So I guess I need to lock my door.
Turn out the lights.
Be on the safe side. But anyway, we've got a lot of news going into the weekend to cover today, and we should get started with that. We've got Emma Crawford joining us.
Emma, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Doing well. I guess the results came out yesterday for the NAEP test, which is one of the biggest indicators they use every 2 years. Is that correct?
Yes, every 2 years.
Students take it every 2 years, mm-hmm. Fourth and eighth graders, and it's one of the biggest indicators for students around the country to compare students in different states and how they're doing. Tell us a little bit about it and what you learned yesterday.
Well, the students are tested in fourth and eighth grade in math and reading. So the fourth graders in Mississippi, they had a really good day yesterday because they made gains, whereas pretty much every other state in the nation was flat or declined in performance this year. So that's from 2013 to 2015. But fourth graders in Mississippi made gains in math and reading. And so they were the only state with a significant increase in fourth grade math and one of 13 states that had a significant increase in fourth grade reading. So that is pretty good news. It's the biggest gain that fourth graders have made since Mississippi started taking the test. So they gained like 6 proficiency points, and that's the most that they've ever had between tests. So
how did the eighth graders do?
The eighth graders did well too. They, you know, they didn't decline, so that's good. They remained flat in reading and then increased slightly in math.
Sure. So, you know, good numbers all the way around.
Yeah, so no declining, which is always a good thing.
Yeah. To put this in context, again, this is the NAEP, the National Assessment for Educational Progress.
Right.
It's informally known as the nation's report card, and it's kind of the biggest measurement that you'll hear policymakers, people, when they say this is how Mississippi's performing compared to Wisconsin, compared to Massachusetts. It's really the only test that students take in common across the country. Not all students take it. It's a random sample of fourth and eighth graders that, take it every other year. You mentioned Mississippi's gains. What are people attributing those to?
Well, Dr. Carrie Wright, the state superintendent of education, said that she thinks the implementation of the Mississippi College and Career Ready standards has made a big difference in these test scores and has helped with the gains, because the students in fourth grade would have started working with those standards in kindergarten or first grade,
sure,
I guess. And
so
they've had the benefit of kind of being held to that higher level of achievement. And so she said she thinks those fourth grade scores, that's probably part of it. And then the governor, Phil Bryant, he said, you know, the third grade reading assessment is also could have benefited those fourth graders who did so well in reading, because they, although they wouldn't have taken the test, they would have benefited from kind of the ramping up of a focus on literacy and just, yeah, those efforts in getting ready for that test to start.
Sure, because the fourth graders last year, I guess, was the first year of the third grade GATES
test. Right, right.
So they would have been a year beyond it. But as you said, it was just the time of putting it in place.
Right, and all that focus on reading and literacy, they would have benefited from that even before the test started. So those are two of the things in Mississippi, at least, that could have had an impact on the scores.
Sure, it's interesting. Of course, good that the scores go up, but it is kind of, I don't know, maybe humorous that those have kind of been two policy debates, whether or not the third grade reading gate, and of course that's been Phil Bryant's big thing that he's championed, and then whether or not you have Common Core, and that's been Carrie Wright's been the big champion of that. So it's mm-hmm. kind of been interesting that they, of course, use the success both to say, see, I told you all along,
right.
In contradiction to one another.
Well, and what's interesting is just kind of reading yesterday other reports, I think something on AP, the fourth graders, Mississippi's gains were not the national trend. So a lot of people were saying Common Core made those other states decline or, you know, caused the lower scores or not as many gains or whatever. And so it's kind of interesting that in Mississippi they're saying, no, it helped, you know.
Sure.
So it is interesting when you look at that. But
I guess you could make the argument that Mississippi's curriculum was so far weaker than what other states were, so this maybe made them stronger
right.
compared to what it did to other states. I don't know, but
right.
interesting.
Yeah, and then I also read something about Florida, and when they implemented their third grade reading test, they also saw big gains in scores like the following year, or in the following years, I guess,
sure.
On this particular assessment. So I don't know. Interesting
yeah.
when
yeah.
you look at it,
yeah, it is.
That way.
Anything else that kind of stood out to you in the numbers or subgroups? Or
it's great that we made gains, and it's, you know, that's a great thing. But also, our scores are still a lot lower than the rest of the countries. When you look at them, we're still below the national average on the actual scores. But, you know, making progress, hopefully we're catching up. And then in fourth grade reading, all of the subgroups, which is students with disabilities, African Americans, Hispanics, economically disadvantaged students, all of those subgroups showed improvements since 2013 in fourth grade reading. And then in fourth grade math, all subgroups except for the Hispanics showed improvement in their proficiency as well. So there's a little bit of closing that gap in the fourth grade, but there is still, in Mississippi and across the nation, an achievement gap between those subgroups.
I get the impression, too, that while there's a lot of celebration in Mississippi, a little bit of what I saw nationally, and I don't know if you saw more on this, was there a disappointment with the overall numbers? Is that fair to say?
I think so. I think in just kind of reading some other articles yesterday outside of the state of Mississippi, people were a little bit disappointed, like you said, just that there weren't more gains made, and, you know, that's always what you want, so.
You mentioned for Mississippi still more work to be done, and
right.
I know Carrie Wright was quoted as saying that at the end of your story. Did she kind of talk more about kind of what happens next, both kind of how you build on this or what the focus is to try to keep improving?
She said, you know, we want to keep the college and career ready standards and keep working on those. And she also mentioned just increasing a focus on literacy and reading and keeping that focus that I guess, has been building. She mentioned very briefly and kind of vaguely, you know, some sort of literacy program that they're working on. So I guess we'll find out more about that as it develops. But, you know,
stay tuned.
Yeah. I think she sounded like, you know, she sounded like they had plans. She sounded optimistic. But she hit on the Common Core and also just that focus on literacy. So,
sure. Well, great. Well, good news, but don't let your foot off the pedal. Thank you, Emma. Thanks for joining and telling us more about it.
Thanks, Chris.
When Emma joins us again, she'll be married. Aww.
That's right.
You're leaving today for?
Yes, leaving tonight.
For Stark Vegas?
For Stark Vegas. The only place to get married that you should.
Yes. And getting married. There we go. And getting married on Halloween, no less.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Zombie Bride. We've talked about this before, though.
Yes.
Well, what was your last time on the show as Emma Crawford?
It is.
So are you changing the name? Or
Are
you hyphening?
Maybe I'll hyphen for work.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Crawford Kent sounds good.
It does sound good. But I like that it's very, I like Kent. It's by itself is so simple.
Emma Kent.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's just so short and sweet.
People get used to it.
Yeah. I haven't been here that long.
They'll get used to it.
People can get used to it.
Yeah.
They'll deal.
Yeah. It's a big byline, but you know, whatever.
Yeah. Deal with it, people.
Well, you have, you heard it here first. We wish you the best and good luck and enjoy the honeymoon, and we'll see you when you return.
All right. Thank y'all.
All the best.
We're now joined by the great and powerful Adam Robinson, photographer at the Mighty Daily Journal. Adam, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well.
I want to talk to you about your In Focus. I love this In Focus thing that you guys have been doing in Monday's papers, not just because I'm the Sunday editor, but...
Oh, no, surely not.
Get to see them all ahead of time, but I have been really enjoying this layout and look forward to it on Mondays that all three of you, Thomas and Lauren as well, have been working towards. You had one in this past Monday's paper that was at the Buffalo Park, is that correct?
Buffalo Park, yep. You know, we were told, hey, we want this In Focus to be something that you guys want to do. And, you know, this isn't something that I would have chosen myself, but we needed something for the time of the year. And, hey, let's do a pumpkin patch. You're coming up. I was like, okay. So called, knew I'd probably be, you know, strapped on time, called the Buffalo Park and spoke with management there and said, yeah, come out a particular day. Luckily, bumped into a group from Calvary Baptist Church, got the preschool kids out there, and they were like, yes, no problem. Come on out. You can hang with us all day. And that was pretty much what unfolded. And you're not there, you know, those kids just aren't there for the pumpkins and the patch or whatever. They run through the corn maze.
All kinds of stuff. There's a zip line, and I've not been out there to see all this, but I mean, you just got born in opportunities for great shots when you've got kids running amok.
It was a photo rich environment.
Yeah.
And luckily there were enough kids there and they got used to me, and you know, they're not at the age of acting out in front of the camera. So
how long were you out there with them?
A good 2 hours.
Wow. Thankfully it was ahead of the rain.
Yeah, that we lucked out on that, and also, like I said, lucked out on the group being willing to let me tag along. You never know what you're gonna walk into in an assignment. And we just thought that was by the hip completely.
You've got five or six great shots of just them running across the net, riding on the wagon. Like we said, zip line, picking out the pumpkin and tug of war. The stuffing the scarecrow was one that I thought was really interesting. Did they get to make their own? Or
I think each group got a scarecrow, and kids got to where they were really into stuffing only one area of the scarecrow. So the instructors, the people at Buffalo Park and their teachers and a couple of parents are like, you kids got to spread it out some. He's not going to have any legs. He's going to be, you know, all Schwarzeneggered out in the chest and Pee Wee Herman in the legs. So,
well, it looks like a great time was had by all. I love this tug of war shot. I know you said that these five or six, there's nothing more aligned. Was there anything that didn't make the cut that you just really enjoyed?
Yeah there were eight total. I tried to at least give eight. And this one kind of went together really quick. And, you know, I told Chrissy on Friday before football, I was like, these are my tops. These are not. However they fit, place them. But I tried to pick a picture that had a child or children doing one of the activities that are offered there as much as I possibly could. And, of course, the centerpiece with the boy with the pumpkin in the patch, That's my dominant one because, mm-hmm. hey, we're at a pumpkin patch. So let's just start with that and build out.
It looks like a great time was had by all, including you.
I had always have fun, man.
Thanks for joining us, Adam.
Thank you, sir.
And as we move forward into the weekend, talking about arts and entertainment and movies, Scott Moore is joining us to talk about the 18th Steve Jobs film to come out in the last 2 years.
There have been a bunch. This is the first one I've seen, though.
I think they're leading up to the Steve Jobs Avengers.
Maybe so. All of them will come together. The thing about if you're an Aaron Sorkin fan, he was the guy behind West Wing. He was the guy behind The Social Network.
Sports Night.
And those shows were so... Everybody on those shows talk good. They talk and walk good. You see that playing out here in Steve Jobs, and it's highly entertaining. The story takes place as like a series of moments leading up to big announcements in Apple and or Steve Jobs' life. So he kind of became famous for having giant product launches.
All those keynotes.
Yeah. And so when the first one is 1984 when the Macintosh launches, and then he's having discussions with his friend Steve Wozniak, arguments really, with the daughter that he refuses to acknowledge, with his long put upon personal assistant, with his boss. And these hyper conversations are going on as he's trying to get ready to make this event happen. Very charged, very dramatic, very interesting to see all of them, all the way through interesting. And you get a picture of, I don't know if you've heard of this before, but the idea that Steve Jobs had the reality distortion field. Mm-hmm. That to where because he wanted it, it would happen, even if engineers missed the birth of their children, they would be there working late and make this stuff happen. These products, actually, there are two Apple computers in use right now in front of me. Bong bong. And I'm an Apple user. I'm an Apple fan. I'm a Steve Jobs fan. I know a little bit. I haven't read, but I haven't gone into it. I haven't seen the other movies or read anything. So I enjoyed this film, highly entertained by this film, but then I left it thinking they end up leaving a whole bunch out. Mm-hmm. You just feel like a bunch of Steve Jobs is left for them to create this bit of drama that they've done in the way they've done it. And so the movie stands on its own as an entertaining movie. I give it a B, but I'm still kind of waiting for a Steve Jobs movie that tells the story, and maybe I should just go back and look at some of the past stuff.
I wouldn't. I've seen a few of the other ones. I've not seen this one yet, but I was looking forward to this one the most. The others are not well done at all, and they do that. They go through the whole story, and I feel like that's why Sorkin and Danny Boyle made the choice to do these standalone stories within the greater film. And I also wonder if that's why it didn't do as well, because there have been so many before.
Yeah, I think that might have something to do with it. And, you know, the movie itself creates its own reality distortion field, because you know these conversations didn't happen. I mean, they're like, so it's more almost like a stage play, in some ways, the way they do this. And so that it becomes, you're getting the truth, you're just not getting facts.
Yeah.
It's being delivered.
Yeah.
And so, again, for anybody, I recommend it for sitting through and just watching a movie and being entertained by it and going, and first off, you're going, what's happening here? What are they doing? What's all this going on here? And then you start getting into the story and you see these characters kind of develop and this constant clash of personalities happening. That is very interesting, but it just seems to lack a certain something that would push me into the A territory.
I foresee it getting a second life after a big Academy push, and I feel like that's what they'll do. I feel like they will push hard on this come award season.
Quite possibly. And again, it's like it is a Sorkin movie, and so you can find this on Encore one night and then just ride this sucker out, because it's like it's one of those where you can click in, and it has a certain momentum to it that will just carry you along, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
It's a well-made film, and again, I'm not sure what quite keeps me out of A territory. I just can't do it.
Yeah, it's just not that for you. Well, we appreciate you going to see it nonetheless.
Hey, showing it at the Cinemark.
I got a question. With so many movies coming up, it would be a conundrum for me, but I'm planning next Saturday to sit in the movie theater at least twice because both the Peanuts film and the new 007 film are coming out on Friday.
Next week.
Yeah, next week. I'm gonna have to do both.
Well, see, you're a lucky man. I have my movie-going fate tied in with Kelly Carlson at Wizard 106, and we have to do bargains about sometimes I'll get a movie I want, and sometimes she gets a movie she wants, and sometimes we agree, but seldom. So we'll just, usually what happens on Thursday, we get up with each other and decide what's going to happen. And it depends on, like, if I pick a movie that was horrible, and I've done that, I picked movies that I've loved and she's hated, mm-hmm. and I don't feel any pity in those cases. But I have picked movies that I hate and she hates, and then I owe her. And so, but I don't know. That'll depend. Yeah. I do want to see that James Bond, and I'm lukewarm on the Peanuts movie.
Oh, because, I'm so excited for the Peanuts movie.
Because Sparky Schultz, Charles Schultz, wasn't in favor of that kind of stuff, and so it's going against the creator's wishes, but I'm still curious.
Everything I've seen of it just seems like the true heart of those characters, though, so I'm looking forward to seeing it next weekend.
I don't know, the big 3D head of Charlie Brown coming at you. Imagine Lucy getting in your face just right there and yelling, calling you a blockhead, Chris. It could happen.
Scary. Pull the football out.
It's probably due somebody to call you a blockhead. I'm not doing it because you're in charge of the podcast.
I've been called it before.
All right. He can edit your words around to say whatever exactly. he wants.
That's why I didn't call him a blockhead.
We were talking a few minutes ago with movie season and everything about Halloween coming up this weekend. This is our last show before the Halloween weekend and whether or not the kids would get to trick-or-treat.
Yeah, you got rain on the forecast.
With rain on the forecast. But it sounds like there might be something for at least the older kids to go do on Friday and Saturday night to get out of the rain at Link Center.
So Link Center used to be a church, so some funerals were hosted there, and it was built on the site of a Civil War battlefield. And I talked to Melanie Dees the other day, and she said that people have reported seeing things, figures, things. And she said that the West of Shake Rag improv group, they've heard, and this is her quote, mysterious disembodied laughter that they couldn't account for. So when West of Shake Rag has a show there at the Black Box Theater, they leave one seat available for whatever entity might want to claim it. Now, you used to work there. Did you ever see anything?
I worked there 5 years. I was there. I mean, I went to church there for more than 20 years when it was Harrisburg. I worked there for 5 years as the director of the building, night and day. I never had any weird occurrences, but that's just me. I know other people have claimed to. So
this weekend, Friday and Saturday, they're going to host paranormal investigation team from Baldwin and also a woman named Sarah Pugh, who's a clairvoyant from Leakesville. And Sarah Pugh, you can see her on TV these days, on Mondays. It's a docu-series that began this past Monday about the Bell Witch in Tennessee. So they're going to come. They're going to go searching through Link Center. They're going to give classes on how to use their ghost hunting tools. And the first event are going to be at 6 o'clock each day, and that's open to anybody who thinks they can handle it. And then the 9 o'clock event each night is only open to 18 and over people who don't scare easily. So no promises. I was not promised that there would be ghosts. I was just promised there would be ghosts would be hunted for. And Melanie's made it quite clear that if they do find a ghost, they've got no interest in kicking it out. They just want to say hello. So if you're interested in being part of that, the phone number at the Link Center is 690-4011.
All right. We will see if anything comes of that. Like I said, any giant 70,000 square foot building in the dark is scary.
It's kind of spooky.
But whether or not anybody's...
And you're our Sunday reporter. You may get called. We may have one of these people on a tour lost forever. And we may have a story in Monday's paper about doom and gloom at Link Center that tear the walls down trying to find people. There could be screaming. There could be all kind of horrible, horrible things happening.
Good thing is Derek will know where to look for him, too.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I know where the bodies are.
I do know where all the bodies are hid anyway. Scott, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, I'm just happy to come and try to make this podcast great again.
Speaking of ghosts and finding haunted things, Derek, you had an interesting column today about the, is it the headless woman?
It depends on who you talk to. The three-legged lady road or headless woman road. I was struggling to think of a good scary story column, and that's probably the scariest one I can come up with, is the deserted, burned-down road in Columbus where people go to find the three-legged lady. Or the headless lady. The story varies. I don't know. She may be three-legged and headless. I never saw her.
You heard her, maybe.
She seemed like a lovely woman. Yeah. We took.
And this is in today's scene section, by the way. You can read more about.
Yeah, this was
column.
In college when you know we didn't have anything better to do. We went out there one night and it was while the locale was very creepy. Didn't really see anything that was, you know, there's a burned down church and it's nothing on the road, no street lights. So you're supposed to go flick your headlights on and off a few times to entice her, which, I'm all about leaving her alone. She's been through enough if she's lost a head and gained a leg.
We had, of course, different urban legends at Ole Miss, and you know, I think the doorknob to the universe comes to mind right away. Mm-hmm. Is this a big Mississippi State? Or, I mean, is this something kind of just you and your friends, kind of a niche thing, or is this something that kind of you do if you're...
I think it's more of a W thing. I don't remember University for Women in Columbus. I never heard a whole lot of people talking about it in Starkville, and honestly, I don't know of many urban legends in Starkville. Itself that we had to travel to Columbus to find this one, but we didn't really see anything, but we thought it'd be funnier to scare other people with the road, so we went out there at sunset one night and dropped a few guys off to hide, which God bless them for doing that, because I wouldn't have wanted to been out there.
I wouldn't have trusted that you'd come back and pick me up.
Well, I'm a man of my word, but you know, we went and got some other guys and took them out there for their first time and did the lights, and you're supposed to honk the horn and do the lights, and after a certain point, they leaped onto the car from the outside and just scared the bejesus out of everybody, and including me. I knew it was coming, and it was one of those things, you know they're going to jump, but you don't know when. But we did find some handprints on the back windshield, which is apparently something that's supposed to happen. She comes up to the... You're expecting her to come, you know, down the road in front of you, and she actually comes at the vehicle.
These handprints were before you brought the friends.
Yes, this was the first time we went where there was, you know, fresh handprints on the back of the... Because, you know, this time of year, it gets... If you're running the AC and it kind of gets muggy and the windows fog up a little bit, just a tad, yeah, so there's nice handprints on the back of the vehicle. But I didn't go back anymore. I chose to leave her alone.
Yeah.
She sounded like she'd been through enough. But apparently, a lot of things, scary things you can find this weekend at the Tupelo Buffalo Park and Zoo is having their haunted trail, which is supposed to be extremely spooky.
Have you gone to it
before? I have not. I don't do a whole lot of spooky stuff. I don't mind a good fright, but I don't like going to horror movies in the theater. And it's not because of what's on the screen. It's because of the people. You don't know when somebody's going to scream. Yeah. Well, it's not even that, but you don't know how when somebody's going to scream or just how they're going to react. I'd rather watch them in the comfort of my own home and know my surroundings a whole lot better. The last real horror movie I went to see in theaters was The Blair Witch Project, and I was like, no, we're not doing this anymore. I'll watch at home from here on out. That's going on. If you want some spooky laughs tonight in Baldwin, there's a comedy variety show of the Halloween.
Yeah, I was getting ready to ask you about that next.
I'm sure you
starring
are.
Starring one W. Derek Russell.
Yeah, I make an appearance. Let's not say starring. I make an appearance, but also Daily Journal photographer Lauren Wood is in a couple of sketches as well. So
tell us a little more about that.
That's the brainchild of Clark Ritchie and Rex Harson over in Baldwin. They're using the Claude Gentry Theater downtown to... The not quite ready for Main Street Players, I guess you'd say, is this group. It's kind of SNL sketch variety show based around the old Universal movies, Dracula and Frankenstein and stuff like that. So good clean fun for the whole family. Nothing spooky, too spooky there, just based off the old 1930s films that people used to love to go see with the old Universal monsters.
Well, if you want to come support Derek and Lauren and Team Superman, tickets still available, right?
Tickets still available and at the door. Yeah, there will be the whole thing will culminate in a game of Family Feud at the end of the show. So
you might have given this. What time? How much
are
tickets?
7 o'clock. I believe the tickets are $12, but do not hold me to that. I don't have it in front of me.
Sure.
But that is at the Claude Gentry Theater in downtown Baldwin on Thursday today.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
This weekend, one thing I'm really looking forward to, it's not really Halloween, although Charlie Chaplin makes me think of dressing up in Halloween. Yeah. Just you know, that kind of thing, just that kind of dress up.
Yeah, the story was interesting.
The North Mississippi Symphony Orchestra opens their season this weekend. On Halloween night, they're doing a live performance of Charlie Chaplin's 1931 film, which is believed to be his greatest achievement in his huge career. But the film City Lights, which was a silent film, as Chaplin did, but it was made after the talking films had already started. So it was a big leap of faith for him to do a silent film after talkies were already in the theaters. But he wrote it, he directed it, he produced it, he starred in it, and he wrote all the music for it. And the music is beautiful. It's a beautiful score to this film. And while you watch the film on the screen at Tupelo High School Performing Arts Center this weekend, the orchestra will actually be playing along with it. And in such a nature that it has to sync up perfectly with the scenes going on the screen. So it's very taxing on the musicians and conductor Stephen Bias, but it's also, when it all comes together, it makes it that much more cool.
Yeah, I mean, to watch that, I guess, I mean, it'll have a true kind of retro Back to the Future, going back in time, kind of seeing that process.
Yeah.
But just kind of, I know he talks in the story about it being just cool behind the scenes of...
I worked closely with the symphony for several years, still do, and I guess last season before last, we did a John Williams concert, if you're familiar with films, and one of the greatest composers for film of all time. I did video for the symphony to perform along with scenes from E.T. and Superman and Star Wars, and just that alone, that wasn't even really synced up with the music. It was just different scenes played and montages and stuff like that to give you a sense of what the nature of the films were, but in the symphony playing those classic Star Wars and Superman and Jaws, yeah. Harry Potter, all those themes along with it was Indiana Jones, all that was very moving. So, but this is just this just big sweeping highs and lows soundtrack that has to, I mean, if they go a second longer on one part, they're going to have to make up for it somewhere else to make sure that the right note is hitting with the right moment on screen. And the fact that Chaplin was able to do something like this in 1931 is a huge achievement.
The coordination, too, for Bias having to watch the film and the orchestra at the same time, and also having to do the mental math of exactly what you said. If you're a second over, he's got to figure out where to shorten something
right
up.
For a maestro to not watch their
sheet music?
Players is a huge thing. He's pretty much glued to that. I mean, he's watching the movie the whole time. So he's conducting while watching the film. And the musicians have to be that much more tied into what he's doing because there's no real interaction there with him being so displaced watching the film because it's got to... It's just a neat thing to go see.
Also, just seeing a silent film, what was the one, Derek, that came out a couple of years ago, two, three years ago?
The Artist,
that's right, which we watched, and it was just interesting then. I mean, again, talking about just going back in time, but it's an art form that obviously isn't around much anymore, and you don't appreciate it, but there is a kind of a depth, and it kind of maybe leaves you alone in your thoughts a little bit more, which is... It's just a neat ride, neat experience.
Yeah, and I think about things like in the 1910s and the 1920s, you know, when they would make movies before talkies really started, when movies would go out to theaters, studios would send sheet music, and they'd actually have an organist in the theater playing along with suggested sheet music. Films didn't a whole lot of time have scores. They were just suggested music to play along, and the organist was just... You know, it's just atmospheric music. It doesn't really tie in with the film. It just is to be played, you know, for dramatic moments and stuff. This actually is specifically for this film, so it makes it that much more awesome.
It's another skill set, I guess, that is underappreciated today. I was reading something the other day. There was a look back. They just had the 40th anniversary of the 1975 Game 6 of the World Series. That's the Carlton Fisk game.
Yeah.
There was a part in that story that talked about the organist at Fenway Park was chosen because of his ability at silent films to just be able to set the mood music and know just the right song to play at the right occasion.
Yeah.
And that kind of made them perfect to do that same thing at the ballpark. Right. And I just thought that was just kind of interesting. Again, a thing in today's culture you don't just hear a lot about.
Right. Well, and I talk about in the story how, and to go back to John Williams, like when John Williams does a film with, I think about the new, we were talking about the new Star Wars movie, you know, J.J. Abrams has directed this. And when directors and composers, when the score is so iconic and has to key up perfectly, they're there through most of the process, like and they see the film edited pretty much in its entirety the way it's going to be shown, and then they have to write the score to accompany and make sure that, you know, when the lightsaber comes out, it needs to hit this music cue at the right point and that kind of thing. So to think that he did this back then with no words, completely silent, and to be able to, you know, in 1931, I mean, it was done on like a budget for $1 million. That's a lot of money in 1931, and he produced it himself. So it was a huge undertaking. But and like I said, a lot of people consider it to be his crowning achievement, and most AFI and lists like that will say that the ending to this film, the final scene, is the top like five movie endings of all time in the history of cinema. So it's a big deal. So the fact that Symphony's doing something cool like this is just that much more neat to me.
We talk about the threat of rain on Halloween too. I mean, I don't know if it'll be a tough night, or particularly with people with kids or whatever, but particularly if it rains, you don't have kids, or if it rains and everything else, looking for something else.
I think
to do.
Regardless, it's just a neat thing to go see. And I agree with Bias's sentiment. At one point he says, anytime orchestra, no matter where you are, you hear that they're playing along with the film, go see it, because it's just that much more neat. And I agree. I've been to a few things. I've seen Star Wars done with a live orchestra before. In fact, we've talked about Back to the Future last week. A lot of places were doing all three films with a live orchestra playing along at the same time. So it's neat to see that done. And it's one thing to see it done with big blockbuster movies like that, but to see it done with something like this that's so iconic and so old is really cool that they can pull this off.
Is that why it's at the Performing Arts Center rather than the Lincoln Center?
Yes, there's a lot more technical needs with a show like this, and a lot more musicians that need to be on stage. Steven needs a lot of room to move around and do what needs to be done with the film. They often jump back and forth. Sometimes they're at the Civic, depending on the nature of what the show is. Sometimes at Link Center. This time specifically needed the use of the High School Performing Arts Center.
Sure.
That again is on Saturday night. Tickets are $25 in advance or $30 at the door. You can get tickets at nmsymphony.com.
Great. Well, good show today, Derek.
Yes. Thank you for joining us, Chris.
Yeah, thanks, sir.
We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. I know you didn't sound too excited.
I got to give you yesterday. I got to give you heck. It's more giving Brad heck than anything. He just keeps disappearing on us.
Yeah, he does.
And he got a haircut yesterday after we were done recording. So
we got to wait till Monday.
He was he was really trying to get out of that being discussed, I guess.
Got a face cut, a haircut.
Mm-hmm. He's just changing up all over.
Yeah.
Apparently he's wanting to scare children for Halloween.
He didn't need to get a haircut to do that.
Well, you said that, not me. He's mad enough at me lately for giving him crap.
Yeah, stuff, now I'm going to get the Facebook messages. All right, well, it's Thursday. Just a reminder about the Double Coverage podcast. As Brad mentioned yesterday, it's going to be a little bit different today. It won't be Parrish and Logan. Parrish is on the road today. Logan, Mississippi State, has a bye week. Instead, Parrish recorded an interview with an Auburn beat reporter, and you'll be able to listen to that, the two of them discussing the game, at doublecoverage.djournal.com. It's also available in iTunes or in podcast apps.
In addition to that, we want to remind you about the Bridal Journal going on November 15th in Verona. You can find out more information of that at bridaljournal.ms. A lot of cool things going on there with the wedding expo for brides and grooms alike. But you've got chances to win some fabulous door prizes. One grand prize equal up to $1,000. So bridaljournal.ms.
And Thrive Marketing. Thrive Marketing is a full-service digital marketing company located in Tupelo, Mississippi, providing websites, search engine optimization, social media management, email, and text messaging services for local businesses. I use Thrive Marketing.
You do?
I do.
Good deal. All right. We'll be back again on Monday. We hope you all have a safe and hopefully dry Halloween. Stay safe. Check the kids' candy. Don't eat all the kids' candy because that'll just make them mad. And they'll grow up to resent you.
And make you mad, too.
It's just going to make you sick.
Sunday morning.
Yeah, we'll see you guys Monday. Don't forget to check us out at DJournalMemo on Twitter. At DJournalNow is our official Twitter for the Daily Journal at DJournal.com. Also, memo.djournal.com is where you can find us online. Don't forget to go to iTunes, search for us. If you listen to us there, rate and review us. We'd really appreciate it. Thanks, everyone.